The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Now your host, Roger Waldron.
Today my guest on Off the Shelf is Tim Herlebus. Tim is the president of CGI Federal, and today we're going to be talking about the IT services marketplace, what's going on, how it's transforming, and where it's headed in the new calendar year. Tim, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, I'm looking forward to this conversation. And, you know, before we get started on the market and what's going on there, could you share a little bit about your background? I understand you're a Boilermaker. Is that correct?
Indeed. I grew up in the Midwest and attended Purdue University. And then I came out here to D.C. for a job in 1988 when President Reagan was still in office.
Wow. I was just about the same time I came here in D.C. So we'll have some war stories to share or whatever. So, and CGI Federal, can you talk a little bit about CGI Federal, what you guys do for your customers, how you deliver best value, that sort of thing, and then we'll get into some of the specific areas we want to talk about.
Sure, absolutely. So we have a over $1 billion business in the U.S. federal market. We work in all sectors in the DoD and civilian and Homeland Security and health and across the gamut, and we provide IT services and consulting for those clients and have been with many of them, like the State Department, the EPA, the Army, for decades.
Right. So that's, you know, from that platform and that, you know, what you do for your clients. We are in a transition to a new administration, but, you know, the operation of government transcends whoever, you know, wins an election or, you know, whoever's in power, that sort of thing. Can we start out like talking a little bit about the federal needs and the market and what you see and how that does transcend administrations?
Sure. You know, at CGI, we talk about the natural cycle of government. So obviously, we're in the early days of a major presidential transition here in the federal market. But every 2 years, there's a congressional transition. In the state and local market, there's gubernatorial transitions and state legislature transitions. So the government is in a constant cycle of transition in that regard. But what is constant is the civil servants that continue at these agencies, the missions of these agencies. You know, and while a new administration may set different priorities, while a Congress may move funding around, the missions of these agencies remains the same. And in that regard, operating these large IT systems and modernizing and innovating remains an important part of what our clients need to do.
Yeah, and in that regard, you know, the way you are servicing or supporting agency missions, yeah, they're ongoing at the point you made, and you know, they sort of transcend politics to a large degree, the operation of government and the support for the American citizen. So are you, with regard to that, you know, in the areas of, like, you know, shared services, hybrid IT, that sort of thing, how are federal agencies, you know, addressing and realizing benefits from utilizing some of those, you know, some strategies and technologies?
Well, sure. There's operating models like shared services, which is one way that agencies can leverage common systems and common processes to operate more efficiently. And then there's, you know, IT models. So we talk about hybrid IT. A few years ago, when OMB came out with a mandate to move to the cloud, move 30%, I believe it was, was the target for CIOs to move to the cloud. That was great. Well, some systems what belong on a cloud, some might be operate more efficiently elsewhere. So the idea of hybrid IT is, how do you manage all those application systems across multiple environments? So you might have a development environment that can run on a low security cloud like AWS or Azure,
sure,
in the public cloud. There might be another set of applications that needs something that's FedRAMP certified. So it might run in, for example, our CGI federal cloud or another secure cloud. And there might be applications that are better off where they are for the next 5 years. But what's key is that these agencies have a mechanism and a platform to manage across all those infrastructure sources to operate their applications. And that's why we call it hybrid IT.
Okay. And I just want to pick up on that. And is I know one of the things that you guys worked on in particular, and this goes back a bit, but I think there's lessons for, you know, as we move forward, because there's talk of a, you know, new infrastructure bill, right? And we had under the America Recovery and Accountability and Transparency the Recovery Act. I'm getting myself tongue-tied here, but there was also a transparency board that was tracking the funding and spending and that sort of thing. And I know there's a strategy there to leverage an EPA platform. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because we are looking at a potential infrastructure, you know, spend bill this year that would be somewhat analogous to that.
Yeah, I'm glad to talk about that. There's a lot of similarities to what we're hearing about this potential infrastructure bill. You can start with the size. So the Recovery Act, we were tracking $787 billion. Mm-hmm. You know, this is the size we've heard, you know, for this new initiative, maybe a trillion. But so they're about the same size. But you've got to track all that. So we were fortunate at CGI. We had an existing contract and infrastructure with the EPA called the Central Data Exchange, or CDX. And it was a platform by which the regulated entities could submit information back and forth with the Environmental Protection Agency. Turned out it was a great platform to build some of the tracking and reporting for the stimulus funds. So we built something called federalreporting.gov, which was a way for us to understand, for the government to understand where all these funds were going, which companies, sure, which parts of which geographies, and where the money was really going, which, as you know, was an important part of that stimulus, given that mm-hmm. the idea was mm-hmm. to stimulate, you know, all as much of the country as we could.
You know, and along those lines, do you see that as, you know, with the pace of technological change as we move forward, like leveraging, you know, and I'm doing a sort of different shared services idea, but, you know, mm-hmm. as you look across the federal enterprise, let's say, if you even call it that, do you see opportunities to leverage pre-existing platforms for other purposes like you did in this case? Is that something that you see the government looking more and more? Because there is this idea that we got to do more shared services.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's leveraging platforms for things, and that was a great example of with the stimulus. But there's also leveraging existing platforms. So there's, you know, shared services is not a new concept in government. It's come and gone under different names. There was, in the Bush administration, it was lines of business.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I remember that. I was in the Bush administration back in that time. Yeah.
And so that concept is the same, that if you've got an agency that's running, say, a financial management system and all the processes around it, it's the system itself, but there's also people, you know, the accounts payable folks, there's the people and the process around it, and they're doing a good job of it. If there's another agency that could leverage that process, that platform, that environment, then obviously it's efficient for them to do that. It's pretty common for some of the smaller boards and commissions to run on. Right. So, for example, the General Services Administration has run our financial system for coming up on 20 years, and they've always had a number of small boards and commissions that have been part of that financial system, because those smaller organizations don't have the interest or the wherewithal to run their own. But then you can move up into larger opportunities. So actually, just about a year and a half ago, we migrated the GSA to the Department of Agriculture's shared service platform. So there's opportunity for large agencies to get efficiencies as well.
Yeah, when you did that, what were some of the challenges? You know, it seems to me, as having worked in the government for a long time, it's like, we have to build our own thing, or, you know, there's a parochialism, right, that goes on, our cultural changes to buy into that. Did you see that? Guys see that?
Well, sure. You're right about that. Everybody's unique, aren't they?
Yes, absolutely. We all are, aren't we?
I think the key is flexibility. The key is to be able to say, look, you know, we can flex in these areas to accommodate what's mm-hmm. unique about what you perceive to be unique about your process. But there are other areas where you might think about standardizing to what's right. already happening. And here are the benefits. if you do that, and here are the costs if you don't. And I think being able to offer a little bit of flexibility there and some structure around consistency and the benefits of that consistency is key. So being open and transparent about that to the
agency. So you're talking about there, that's a bit of business process reengineering as well as, IT, migration, right? That's sort of the combination.
That's exactly right. So things are like workflow and security access and things like that.
Well, hey, Tim, we have to take our first break right now. We're already up on the break. My guest today is Tim Herlibus. He is the president of CGI Federal. We're talking about the federal marketplace. We'll continue a little bit on our shared services discussion, but we'll also talk a little bit about digital transformation or, the other term, IT modernization, and what that all means, what that looks like out there. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Tim Herlibus. He is the president of CGI Federal. And Tim, last segment, we're talking a bit about shared service. I just wanted to finish up that conversation. Just your sense as to the opportunities the government has, to leverage across various platforms. Do you believe there's a lot of unfulfilled potential there for savings and mission support?
I think there is. I mean, you can see if you look through the history, there's places where the government did it well. Payroll's an example.
Yes,
Where over 30 years, we were able to really get some efficiencies out of consolidating payroll operations.
Mm-hmm.
Financial management is kind of halfway there, maybe, but with a lot more efficiencies to be found, I think. And then there are other areas. Grants, in my experience, has been a little bit more difficult because the types of grants that different agencies issue and work in are can be vastly different, even though at the root they're not. It's
right.
They're more of a perception issue about the uniqueness of, what HUD does versus what the National Science Foundation does, for example.
Right. So that's a great, your point about us as someone who worked in the government for 20 years, your point about payroll is a very good one, just because you just don't, when you said that, I just thought about, I worked in the government. There was never, ever, ever an issue about, payroll being paid on time. I mean, you had shutdowns a couple times, right? But just, that people take that for granted. And the back end behind that, and to use a shared services model across a government to do that, people don't appreciate how hard that is to do, and take it for granted. So
you asked me about my life story at the outset here.
Yeah,
the
sure.
First project that I worked on when I came to Washington D.C. was the Consolidated American Payroll Processing System at the Department of State. So within the first year, I was watching payroll runs overnight for 32,000 people around the world. And it was sure a great introduction to the scope and services that our government provides. So you're right in saying nothing is that simple.
Right, and people do take it for granted. But I want to shift the conversation a little bit now to digital transformation and IT modernization. And I guess they're two different things, but they can be the same, or they could overlap a little bit. But first, I guess I'm just going to ask, what is, from your perspective, digital transformation?
Sure. Transformation is different from change. And IT, I would think of IT modernization as taking what you've got and modernizing and making it more efficient, maybe innovating and implementing some new technologies. Digital transformation is more about using the technology we have today to completely transform the way that a process works or an interaction with a citizen works. So think of defining what a transformation might look like and working backwards from that versus working forward from where you are. A good example of a disruptive transformation that I think everybody would understand is something like an Uber. Or mm-hmm. Netflix, which changed the way that people watched movies and consumed movies in their home. So that kind of transformative model is, and then supported by information technology.
Yeah. In contrast there, and I just will get define the terms and we can dive into a little bit. So when you think about IT modernization, and that's language that's, digital transformation is obviously out there and folks talking about that too. But these days too, within government, people are talking about IT modernization. And what's your thoughts on what that is, or what, and then we can dive into some of this a little bit.
Well, I can connect it to the conversation we had about shared services and the need to find efficiencies. And I know you're aware, as we all are, of the figure that says the government is spending 80% of the budget on operations and maintenance of the existing IT infrastructure. And so trying to modernize systems with just the 20 or 19% that's left is a big challenge. So, you know, shared services is one way to try and free up some of that money to support that modernization. Obviously, there have been bills floated in the last year and a half with ideas of models of how that might work, and we'll see what we get here from this Congress and this administration. But, you know, people are doing what they can, at least our clients are, in mm-hmm. parts, you know, moving things to the cloud, you know, trying to implement you know, hybrid IT platforms like I discussed earlier to try and at least be ready for the opportunity to modernize where they can.
Yeah. Do you see, you know, you hear, I mean, I talk to folks, the cloud seems to be, you know, the, I don't want to say it's default, but it's central to the strategy to, quote, modernize, just in terms of, so you're not investing in, you know, iron anymore, and you're moving to where you don't have to own the infrastructure as the default sort of strategy, because there aren't many other.
And it's not ways. Just iron, you know, it's not just the iron, meaning, you know, as we know, is a metaphor for the actual machines, but it's also the buildings and the cooling systems and the electricity and the security for those buildings. Yeah. So, you know, when people talk about cloud, it solves a lot of those challenges for agencies. And again, anything that technology or technology paradigms can do to free up, you know, money and people in those agencies to be focused on the mission is a good thing. And that's, you know, our role in this ecosystem is to help our clients do that.
So here, philosophical, or just, I don't know, this question keeps popping in my head. You know, they're not mutually exclusive terms, right? Digital transformation and IT modernization. You know, do you see opportunities to modernize by transforming? I don't know how else to say it. I mean, you know, because I think like your Uber example is a great example of a transformation of an entire industry. Mm-hmm. You know, the government identifying those opportunities, it seems to me, is going to be critical over the next few years, right?
I think that's right. And you know, there are methodologies that have evolved in the government space over the last several years, you know, the agile development, mm-hmm. you know, in many places replacing the traditional waterfall approach. And that's one way to get kind of some quick results and to see what might work or what might not. As you move into DevOps and those kind of things, new methods for doing that to try and free things up. But, you know, we've found in innovating with our clients that we can find, you know, I mentioned the CDX platform earlier. That originally was a piece of open source code that we wrote and published to encourage mm-hmm. everybody to use it, and it turned into the opportunity that we discussed earlier. More recently, we down in Lafayette, Louisiana, in partnership with the University of Louisiana Lafayette, we developed a system which helped track elements of the environment that was a big help to our client at the EPA. So there are pockets of innovation like that can be transformative, mm-hmm. that you could call digital transformation, that fit in with the kind of the overall pace of IT modernization.
Yeah. You know, from that perspective, I know it seems to me that, you know, access to innovation and access to, you know, technologies and capabilities, that one of the ways that the government could get to that point is to leverage those kind of specific areas. Are you seeing any, you know, like specific examples of using best practices or that agile development that's sort of been leveraged across? You know, we talked about some of the examples that you guys been at. Are you seeing other places where there's opportunities for that?
Well, I mean, I think there's other phenomenons going on. So I give you an example. There's something called low code development, which is, so if you think of a platform like Salesforce.com, mm-hmm. we actually built a processing system that helps us work with the State Department to process visas all around the world. And it's sitting on top of the Salesforce.com platform. And so what it means is you're not starting from scratch. All the fundamental elements of what you need in a in a system around scheduling and such are there, and you spend your time tailoring it more directly to the mission and to the purpose for that you're building for. And so that's another way that people have started to be able to get things done faster and to spend their money more efficiently.
Yeah, when you're thinking about something you said earlier, sort of cup, I wanted to follow up on is you talked about, you know, the end state or like, you know, looking, you know, when you're transforming something, where do you want to go? Mm-hmm. Is a piece of that, it seems to me, is trying to understand how the environment is working, how people want to interact with their government. So whether it's through apps or whatever, or you know, some other way, and getting a sense of what that, you know, what makes sense for the citizen or how the market is changing and then adapting to that. Are you seeing government clients focusing on that, you know, on focusing on the end user, i.e. the citizen, for that?
I think so in many areas. If you think about, you know, the citizen maybe who wants to get a passport, do they really need to know that it's the Department of State that issues the passport? Is there an easier way for them to just go and get a passport? Now, they're going to be on the Department of State site when they go through it.
Yeah.
But they, now, 20 years ago, they would have to figure that out. Now they can, you know, search and find passport and it directs them right there. Mm-hmm. and launches them into the process, which is what's important to them, right?
Right.
Not
right.
necessarily how it's handled from a bureaucratic point of view.
Or whose logo's on it, kind of thing.
Exactly.
As long as it goes to the right place. Right. Wow, we're already up on the next break. My guest today is Tim Herlibus. He is the president of CGI Federal. And when we come back, we're going to continue our discussion of transformation, modernization, and innovation, and some of the interesting things CGI is doing in that, in the innovation area in particular. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Tim Herlibus. Tim is the president of CGI Federal. And Tim, we took the break. Yeah, we were talking about digital transformation, IT modernization, and you mentioned innovation. So I want to get back on innovation a little bit as well. And we can weave in those other two topics as we go along. But, as you know, innovation is the buzzword of the day in a certain sense. When you talk about DOD, you know, on the Hill, access to innovation, to support agency missions, support the warfighter, all those kind of things. How does CGI approach delivering innovation for its government customers?
You know, what we've learned over the years is that innovation is really a cultural thing. You can't just walk in and say, order somebody to innovate.
That's right.
They've got, right?
Right. That's right.
They've got to be in an environment that encourages innovation with people who are interested and curious and want to create something. And so those environments exist everywhere. They exist in parts of government agencies. They exist in companies like ours. You know, one interesting thing, I'll put a plug in for my fellow D.C. area corporations, is that the government a couple of years ago had this thing about, we're going to go out to Silicon Valley and see if we can get some innovation. Some of the folks that came into 18F and elsewhere from there, which is great. You know, we work with and partner with a lot of those companies, and there is indeed great innovation coming from Silicon Valley. But guess what? There's great innovation coming from the DC area. There's great innovation going on at government agencies all over the country and even all over the world. And companies like ours are innovating with them. So that's the first thing I would say is that you know, any culture can become an innovative one. But what some of the things that we do to create such a culture? We do some things within our company. So we have what we call spark centers. These are places where we've got maybe new technology, new ideas, vision goggles, you know, whatever you can come up with to get people to think differently about something. And so we'll host clients in these spark centers, maybe for half a day or a day, and bring some challenges that they're facing into the centers and walk through different creative ways that we might be able to solve those problems. And the idea is to get a good idea. You know, you might throw 50 ideas up against the wall, but if you get just one good one, then that was worth it. So that's one thing we do. We're a global company, so we have global global network that, around innovation. It's called Innovate and Collaborate, and it's a way for us to talk to our colleagues around the world to learn what they're doing for the government of the Netherlands or the government of the UK, and to bring innovative ideas from other places. So that's another thing that we do. But it's important to also remember the innovation I mentioned a minute ago that's going on within our the government. I'll give you a good example. We've worked with the Marine Corps down in Blount Island, Florida, for many years. And together with them, we've built an RFID system, a passive RFID system that helps track supplies as they come on and off the ship. As they're deployed, it tracks the maintenance as they're in, you know, on Blount Island itself. It goes mobile, so we've deployed with them around the world and track these things as they come off the ship. And every year we're innovating, so they've got, you know, got kind of a lab set up there on the base and innovate alongside.
So I imagine their needs and, you know, and change rapidly. Right, I would think, like, their logistical needs and how, and they as well as you learn from deployments and those things, how to improve things, how to build on what you've already innovated.
It's absolutely a constant learning, you know. So not only are conditions always different. Oh, look, this how does this thing respond when it's sandy, you know, versus when it's wet, versus when it's dry. And those are all things that you know, we learn together from doing. And then of course the technology in that space is, you know, changing rapidly. And so as something new comes along, could that help us or not? How would that fit in or not? Let's try it. Let's see what works there. You know, you learn a lot of practical lessons, you know, gee, this thing misses every other thing that I walk by because of the, you know, the way it bounces off the concrete floor. And so it's not going to work inside. It might work outside, you know, things like that.
Yeah, right. Sure. And that, I presumably that gets leveraged too, like that learning and that, you know, ideas you learn supporting one customer can theoretically help drive a solution or support a solution for another customer.
You're right. And that gets back to a culture of innovation. You've got to provide the platform for people to have those conversations. And so we bring our team from Blount Island in, and we have collaborative sessions with teams from elsewhere. We have, you know, an online collaboration site. I think I mentioned that earlier, where people can get access from wherever they are to learn from what their colleagues are doing.
Brainstorming kind of thing, right?
Just
pulling
like
people
that.
Together. Yeah, absolutely. Right. That's cool. You know, I understand too, you've done some, CGI has done work in, with regard to a smart city. Can you talk a little bit about what that's, you know, when I think of smart city, I'm thinking like Internet of Things and sort of managing that area. Can you talk a little bit about what you've done there?
Sure. Well, if you think about a city, think about all the systems involved in a city, right? There's transportation, there's electrical systems,
right.
You know, there's law enforcement and all those things. So we've worked with partners in a number of cities to help city managers begin to understand that in a comprehensive way and begin to leverage smart technology, newer technologies to help manage and tie some of those things together.
Right. So and when you do that, are you looking to help them? Because when I think of a city, and you know, and I think of the stovepipe, sort of like right where what the Department of Sanitation is, you know, supporting its buildings, doing what it does, and never sort of you look at what their operation, but don't look at it sort of holistically across the entire city operation to see where you could, you know, collaborate or how you could save money here by doing something. Is that kind of thing? Is that
what it's not unlike what we were talking about at the federal level in terms of shared services, is it?
Right. Okay.
You know, so what are you doing? What's the police department doing that, you know, the fire department could learn from or maybe even reuse? What's the municipal, one municipal agency doing that another could learn from? So it's not unlike shared services at the federal level.
Right. So getting back to digital transformation versus IT modernization, do you see, and I'm going to ask it a different way, do you see transformation as the key to modernization in the long run? I mean, you know, to your point, you made the observation earlier about, you know, 80% of, you know, the IT spend is, you know, is actually going towards maintaining legacy systems. And that doesn't give you a lot to invest in actually modernizing. So does that, you know, and what you guys look at, what we've talked about is, you know, maybe having to make that like bigger leap to transformation to and looking for how you leverage that, just because it, you don't, you know, when I think modernization, you, again, you're taking one piece out and replacing it to another. So it's just the strategies. I'm not really clear on that question, but, you know, I'm trying to think, is transformation the key to modernization, I guess?
You know, I think it enables modernization. So if you're transforming parts of your mission, parts of your operation, and some of the ways I mentioned earlier, then it makes those more efficient and it frees up. So the 80% is going to get chipped away. You think about, you know, 20 years ago running a major financial system, say at the Department of State, and it running it on a mainframe, and the cost of that, you know, mainframe. You know, now as we've migrated to modern technology, we've modernized with Department of State, for example, their financial management systems, both domestically and globally. By virtue of doing that, their operating costs for some elements are now lower, and so now they can take that and invest in things like data analytics. Which we're doing with them, so they can have quicker, better visibility into their operations around the world. So I think that to tie your question back, you know, this transformation maybe frees up some money to do some modernization, and they go hand in hand. And over time, you can get there. But it's probably about picking out the real important things. You know, think agency by agency. What are some of the key things they're doing, and which are the first places that they ought to be looking at transforming.
Focusing priorities, right, as moving forward. That's great, Tim. And we do have to take our last break. So my guest today is Tim Herlibus. He is the president of CGI Federal. And when we come back, we'll continue our discussion of the IT marketplace, looking at also what CGI is doing across the nation to try to support opportunities and innovation. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Tim Herlibus, and Tim is the president of CGI Federal, and we've been talking about the federal IT marketplace, how it's changing, as well as opportunities where CGI has been delivered best value support for agency missions through transformation and modernization as well. Tim, you know, one thing I wanted to make sure I got to ask you about, because it sounds like a really fascinating, interesting program that CGI has. It's your onshore centers. Can you talk a little bit about what those are?
Sure, I'd be glad to. If you think about the period in the kind of mid to late 90s, as the internet became ubiquitous enough that we could really be connected with people around the globe, in IT, there started a trend that people call outsourcing, which basically means I'm going to take, you know, 100 programming jobs that are here in the United States, and I'm going to move them to India, where there's a plethora of talented, educated people who are also, relative to the United States, far cheaper. And so it's a win-win. You provide those people jobs and livelihood, and yet you reduce the cost of what you're doing here. At CGI, we said to ourselves, gee, couldn't we do something similar right here in the United States and create American jobs? And so in about 2005, 2006, then Governor Warner in Virginia worked with us to open up our first what we called onshore delivery center.
Okay, now I get that. I get it.
That's
very
where
good.
That comes from. Offshore, onshore.
Okay.
Our first onshore delivery center in a town called Lebanon, Virginia, which is in the southwestern part of the state.
Yep,
and it was a county called Russell County, and the county provided the broadband that we needed to operate from there. So that was their investment. And they gave us some tax credits for creating jobs. And today, 10 years later, we celebrated our 10-year anniversary last spring. And now Senator Warner came and joined us for that celebration. And we've got 400 people employed there.
Well, congratulations on that.
It's a fantastic program. And these are people that went to college at East Tennessee State University, which is right across the border, and left the area. And people came back. They said, I want to live here. I left because there wasn't a job, and now there's a job. So it really is a big success story. We did it there. We thought, hey, we could do this other places. So we went to Alabama, we went to Texas, and most recently we went to Lafayette, Louisiana, and we've repeated that model. So using our onshore delivery centers, we've created more than 1,000 jobs in places like Lafayette, Louisiana, Lebanon, Virginia, Belton, Texas, San Antonio, and other places.
When you think about that, that's quite remarkable that, you know, that you have an opportunity to provide that kind of opportunity in areas where you don't typically think, well, that's going to be, quote, someplace where an IT company is going to locate. It must have been a big team effort, I guess I'm where I'm going, whether it's the localities, the state governments, the CGI, all pulling together to pull that off. Because it doesn't sound like it's not an easy thing to do to open a new, you know, business operation anywhere and under any circumstances.
But absolutely. And working side by side in great partnership with the local folks, the local government is key. They were involved and are involved every step of the way. In most of these locations, we have a partnership with one or more local universities. So in Lafayette, it's with the University of Louisiana Lafayette. It provides, you know, a great source of employees to hire, but also, you know, we were talking about innovation earlier. You know, we continue to collaborate with those universities in those locations, and they're part of some of the collaborative things I was talking about earlier. So, you know, universities, local government, state government for sure, because that's typically where the incentives come from. But when you do that, you know, we can get effective rates from these folks that are very competitive. And that's a win for us because we can bid things cheaper to the government, and it's a win for the government because they can get services that are every bit as high a quality, if not more, for a more reasonable price. And what happens in these delivery centers is they start to become good at certain things and kind of become centers of excellence, if you will, around things, whether it's agile development or system testing or a whole number of other things.
And so their success then feeds on it, and people want to come there to work to be able to do agile development.
People want to come there, and then people who are running big programs here in Washington, D.C. want to use more of those people in those centers to help them deliver.
Right, and so it could be, you know, and it seems to me folks who want it, it's a quality of life or a lifestyle opportunity as well. And I say that because when you described it and you know, the reasons for doing it and how it's helping folks, I just, you know, think about where I grew up. I grew up in rural Maine, northern Maine, you know, a county the size of Connecticut and Rhode Island, you know, geographically with like 90,000 people, and how, you know, the search for, you know, to try to attract business and that sort of thing, and how people would want to stay, but people left because there weren't any jobs. And it's a very commendable, you know, thing that you guys are doing. So,
well, you know, it's been a huge win for us in all those ways. I can certainly tell you it feels really good to go to those centers and see many folks.
I bet it does. It's a great story. You know, and that's actually transformation, right? In a certain sense, right? That's transformation or innovation, right? Thinking outside the box, onshore rather than offshore. So let's get back a little bit on transformation or innovation just real quickly. And I just want to get your sense of where you've been in this business a while, and whether you call it transformation or modernization, as you look at, you know, the past, you know, couple decades, let's say, you know, aging both of us here a little bit, and where the federal market has come to where you see it's going, what has been like, what strikes you the most? I don't want to say your biggest challenge, biggest opportunity, or biggest change. Just when you think of that time period, what sort of strikes you?
I think that being an organization, we spend a lot of focus and time on bidding on new work and existing work with our current clients. And the procurement environment in the last 20 years has been interesting to observe. You know, in some ways it's the same. You know, we're unique in the federal government from many other markets in that we have pretty clear rules in the federal acquisition regulations. So we kind of understand what the rules are.
Yes.
But, you know, the competition has become, I think, more fierce than it was 20 years ago for a lot of reasons. Part of that is the downturn in 2008, 2009 of the commercial market. People came into the federal market. And at the same time, you know, the challenge folks have talked about for years of the procurement workforce and people retiring and not having enough and not having enough well-trained, it puts them in a difficult spot. And so then you get the advent of things like, for example, low-price technically acceptable, LPTA. You know, we're starting to see that kind of recede as a method in the defense space and elsewhere.
I can say that's a good thing.
I think so. It's probably okay for certain types of things, but I think to buy anything of any complexity that way is problematic. But think about it from the procurement folks' viewpoint. It makes it easier to make a decision and more defensible. So anytime they have to use judgment, then the protests are way up. I think protest reform is something that I've heard bantered around as something that might be a priority here in the next couple of years. I think that would be good. I think if we can let these folks do their job and let them, you talk about innovation, they need to be able to evaluate innovative proposals from CGI and others. And if they can't do that, if they're hamstrung by methods like LPTA or the threat or fear of protest, then it makes it difficult.
Right. I couldn't agree with you more. LPTA is the antithesis of value and innovation and what the government really, to support agency mission. If you really want to, create efficiencies and effective government, you don't buy low price, right? You buy best value, right? So I want to thank my guest today, Tim Herlibus. Tim is the president of CGI Federal, and you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.